Thanks, Rob. Now, those of you who were here 2 years ago, remember I talked about the history of pinball fandom, what we're all involved with, up to that point, up to 2004. And I ended by talking about four things that I thought this community could do to move on to the next step, the next great advancement. And of those things, the good news is that one of them has actually been accomplished, and that was a physical site that exists year-round that could be a new kind of an entry point into pinball fandom, and that, of course, is the Pinball Hall of Fame in Las Vegas. So one item checked off, done. Another item that this community could do is help in some way to push the tournaments we now have to another level where they might get coverage on something like an ESPN. And I know from the discussions in RGP and elsewhere that this is moving along. I think that everybody who has some kind of a contact in ESPN has offered to make that phone call. And we have the IFPA reinvigorated, so things look very optimistic on that. A third one that's probably more pessimistic. In fact, it was an action item from 1991, from the seminar expo in 1991, still has not been accomplished. That's some kind of agreed upon standards for preservation and grading and describing the state of a machine other than photographically in a way that could be used interchangeably for things like price guides and advertising. And the fourth thing is the subject of today's seminar, and that is, how do we find good machines on location? How do we reward the locations and the operators that are doing a good turn for pinball, trying to promote pinball? Now, at this point, I have to help us get synchronized on our terminology. So I have the modern version of the chart, which I originally did in Silver Ball News and Views several years ago. So this is the structure of the industry with a new addendum on the side here, because direct sales to the home are now so important.
Bags in the way.
The bags in the way, sorry. I'll set this down there in a minute. Now, you note that I've got some color coding here. The location is in this alarming pink color because that's a sort of a different kind of mentality that we have to deal with. And I've got three people here who are going to help us get that perspective. None of them is an actual location, but they all come from these other parts of our industry structure here. Everybody except the location on this chart has some kind of a vested interest in the success of coin-op, at least, and probably pinball. Representing the distribution sector, and one of his guys is Ryan Cravens, who works at Betson by day, but he's also here because he does a pinball locator site, or a locator site for coin-ops in general, barcade.com. An operator, there's two kinds, one that works with locations that are separate businesses, and then there's the integrated form, an arcade, where the entity buying the machines is running them on their own property, as opposed to bringing them to other businesses over on this side here. So this location, as Gary Stern has often talked about, is looking at the coin-ops as some kind of an ancillary offering with an ancillary source of revenue associated with it, so they get some incentive to support pinball if they run pinball, but not as much as all these other people who are depending on pinball for their livelihood, all the way down to here. Wherever you see this chain lead orange all the way down, that's ownership of the machine, and if it's in revenue service, there's a stake in getting those coins in the cash box. So we have, for the operator segment, Don Bosworth from North Carolina, who you saw here last year, who's been to many of these expos, and is interesting to me as an operator who's actually in the business operating before April of 1969, when Pinball Wizard was a hit record. That means he was an operator back in the dark ages. before pinball was in any way thought to be cool and was generally thought to be some kind of evil thing.
So here's the chart.
And for the player segment, we have Dave Slabiak from the Twin Cities Pinball Enthusiasts. This is a very interesting player organization. I know there are, around this country and in other countries, there are regional player organizations, but what's so distinctive about Twin Cities is that it's very much a part of their philosophy to support playing pinball on location. So yesterday on the tour, some of us heard from Gary Stern a startling new number that for Pirates, he's now saying 25% of the sale of Pirates is in that other column, the direct sale to the home where it would not go out in revenue service. And that's good in a way. I'm going to take an educated stab in the dark and say that's $2 million of gross income to Stern Pinball for home sales on that one title and still going. But for the continued success of pinball, for a manufacturer to stay in business, he's got to have the rest of the business, all the other side of the chart there. That means that people like us have to not stay at home all the time or get people out there where they can play pinball. And there's a couple ways that this comes up in the information sharing kind of environment. One, how many here are frequent readers of rec.games.pinball, even if you just lurk? Okay, so for the audio tape, I say it looks like about half the people in the room admit to at least reading rec.games.pinball, if not posting, and I'll call it RGP from now on. And sometimes on there, you'll get queries. Where is a good place to play pinball in fill in the blank? And that's something that Barcade.com is one of the websites that makes an attempt to answer that in a systematic way. And then we have to think about all those other entry points for the people who aren't as committed to pinball as we are. People who see something on TV, like that promo for the All-Star Game, and they see pinball imagery on TV, they see it in the movies, they hear songs that mention pinball, or they hear something about, oh, there's this pinball show in my town this weekend, you know, especially in Pennsylvania where there's several different weekends where there's something going on. Then it goes away. At some other time of the year, they want to play pinball. Where do they go? How do they find out where to go? Maybe they go to the web and do some kind of a search. Will they come up with an answer that tells them where to play pinball on location? If they don't, then the business is in more trouble. So let's try something for you, Don, as a start. Would you be willing to tell us right here and now, all these pinball enthusiasts, if someone were to come to Central North Carolina on a business trip or whatever, and they wanted to play good pinball on location, do you have a location on your route that you would recommend? And go ahead and plug it. Tell us right now, street address, whatever. Use the microphone, please.
I can talk loud enough, can I? Yeah, without a doubt, I do. You're talking a family location or a bunch of men out?
One of each.
Okay. I got a bar over in Chapel Hill, North Carolina called The Cave. Great atmosphere. The top of the machines actually go up into the ceiling of the roof because they're too high for the...
So that location only worked with you to cut into their ceiling to help you out.
The owner gave me a hammer and said, make a hole.
That's a good location.
Make it fit. And to give an example, that bar also is a Simpsons bar where the Simpsons comes on television. And the bar fills up with people, watches The Simpsons, and they go on about their way. Well, when Simpsons came out, it was a no-brainer. And I made a fortune. That pin stayed there for over a year and paid for itself 3-4 times during that 1-year period of time, which has got to be a record for me.
How about a family location?
Family location. I don't have any arcades, so it's just going to be places that families can go. I've got a laundromat in Lewisburg. It's got actually has three pins, so they've got a little variety there. Unfortunately, my tax bars is down right now, but good selection. There's a, let's see, there's Attack from Mars. I still operate some old Gottliebs. There's a Rescue 911 in there. And what's the third? I can't even remember what the third is.
So if you're ever visiting Lewisburg, North Carolina, bring just one set of clothes so you have a lot of excuses to go to this laundromat. Okay, so on the other side of it, the players are trying to find places to play, sometimes in a systematic way, as Dave will tell us about the Twin Cities. Do you encounter any players, Don, up there that, you know, are activists, that, like the kind of people you see here at Expo?
No.
Okay.
No. It's so, all, probably most of the time, it's local people that are there. Now, in the Chapel Hill location, it's a little different because you get people that follow the bands that play that bar. So that's a little different.
So right now, you couldn't name a player that you would trust if they sent you an email. You don't know if they're telling you the right thing about what's going on with the machine or what's going on in a particular location on your route.
The laundromat would be difficult. The bar would not, probably. The bar
okay, you could get good feedback. Yeah. And you work with them. Do you ever do any events like tournaments or?
No, but that's by their choice.
Yeah. So I think, personally, my opinion is that's not really necessary. Now, Dave, you have these, was it every third week you go out to a location? And are you trying to have a tournament there, or is this just some event like a bunch of people going out to play pinball?
I guess we don't feature on the tournament end. We do recognize tournament as well as everything else. Everything that we do, including what we're doing here, everyone that collects, does everything to help out in the pinball industry or promote your hobby, or just even if you just buy them because you like them, it's all part of the hobby. So we don't look away or shy away from that in terms of communicating or working with the tournament people, but we stress a friendly playing environment for everyone. The group, and just a quick little history thing, and Dave's told me I gotta be a little song. I'm sorry, I'm very, I know they can.
So go.
Sorry. Anyway. I guess the gist of it is we go out every 3 weeks to play pinball. We pick a random location that we haven't been to in 365 days. They have to have at least two working pinball machines. And then on average, there's 15 people that show up and put cash in a coin box every 3 weeks. And that's how, you know, Dave talks about it rewarding the operator. We look at it as the proliferation of pinball and promoting pinball, because the home sales, everything is all part of the equation. But if the operator doesn't make money, he's not going to buy pinball. Gary isn't going to make pinball.
Okay. And you sometimes give them warning that you're coming so they'll repair the game?
Yes. In fact, a couple of the members take it upon themselves often to call or email. And a couple of the operators now, we've been doing this 4.5 years, have contacted us wanting feedback, because we're not all about the burnt out light bulb or the slightly dirty play field. We're about that flipper that doesn't allow you to shoot the ramp for the jackpot. We go out, we get enthused, and we get the location to help us get the operator involved if they don't even listen to us. They come in, fix the machine, 15 people are in there playing that game. Somebody's standing in the corner going, the regular one. Oh, that looks pretty cool. I remember pinball. And we may or may not be able to talk with them. A lot of people don't want to see a bunch of nerdy pinball people that are getting crazy. But nevertheless, when we leave a day later, they're going to go, wow, there was 15 people playing the machine. Now, the machine's been cleaned up, repaired, and working. We came in, showed them what a good time it still is, and they might go over there. And myself, I'll often leave credits on a game when I walk out at the end of the night. So someone else might walk up and say, what the hell is this? And hit the button and away they go. So, and I should say that I'm speaking for a group of people that all have input. It's very, very grassroots. There is no king of pinball. There is no one direction other than trying to promote playing and promoting the operator.
So, Don, how does that sound to you as an operator? Do you think you could work with a group like that if they emerged in your area?
Yeah, at one time, a number of years ago, it started, it built up a little momentum, and it fell apart. And that's probably my fault, because I was the initiator, and it's difficult with my schedule to, you know, it takes volunteer help. And I wasn't getting any volunteer help other than to show up and play and that kind of thing.
Well, there's going to be lots of opportunities for volunteer help that will be mentioned in the course of this hour. Ryan, do you have any comments here on what you're hearing from these people?
I'm sure a lot of folks out there are probably wondering now, what the heck is Barcade.com? And it's...
How many people have looked at Barcade.com already? Yeah, only three.
Okay, there you go. Well, basically, Barcade, and I'll keep it real brief. Barcade is a site that was developed by my company, Benson, as a way to promote the industry as a whole. Obviously, pinball is a big part of it. And the goal behind it is to list as many locations that are out there and to basically educate the public about games that are coming up, the new pinballs, the new video games, whatnot. And what has actually happened in the 2.5 years we've been around, we've become the number one website for the industry as far as, you know, looking at the manufacturer sites, looking at the organization sites. And we have teamed up with some folks. Basically what we do is we ask people to contact us, mainly players and operators, say, listen, what locations are out there that have these games? And it's not been a whole lot, to be honest with you, but we've had quite a few pinball lovers out there that have peppered our site. And it's been a big push for us because, you know, pinball definitely has an attraction to it. Some people call it kitschy attraction, but it is something that has really helped us out. We get a lot of our traffic whenever we announce the Neustrom pinball, or whenever we talk about, you know, the folks down in Australia about what they're doing. So pinball is very, very important to us. And we have focused on a few locations. One location is kind of near and dear to my heart, is in Seattle, Washington, where I grew up and lived until just recently, until I moved here. And it's called Shorty's.
You know Shorty's?
Yeah. And Shorty's is a fantastic little dive bar with, I believe, 12 pinballs in mint condition. And, you know, we made a big big push on that, saying, listen, this is one of the few places that we were aware of that took pride in pinball. And so we made a big push on that, and we're always looking for other locations like that. So that's kind of where we fit in. And to kind of point out that the chart that David actually had, believe it or not, I don't look too old, but I think I've worn just about every hat in that that organization. And in fact,
well, from a famous family of
my
distributor sales.
Exactly, and we had a family arcade where we had constantly 6 or 7 pinballs. So it's, you know, to be honest with you, pinball has always been a huge part of my upbringing. I grew up as an arcade rat. So.
Okay, well, you brought up something that I think is a significant way in which we can help integrate your investment in Barcade, which is a serious financed investment, unlike some of the volunteer actions, with the kind of grassroots thing that shows up not only in player organizations, but also on RGP. Many good things have already arisen out of the community, often by meeting here at Pinball Expo, so we get something started face-to-face, and then we carry it on online. So we have good things. I would point to the Internet Pinball Database, ipdb.org, as an example of something that came out entirely from the grassroots, no manufacturer participation getting any of the data in there, and yet it is the definitive resource for information about pinball machines. We can do it again. Now, you mentioned Shorty's, and that's an example of what I would call a world-class location. Already, this community has shown a lot of talent for exposing the world-class locations. The SS Billiards in Hopkins, Minnesota, Lions Classic Pinball, which we heard about in the last hour, possibly Fun Spot in New Hampshire could qualify there because it's got the 31 pinball machines, none newer than 1994. The Pinball Hall of Fame in Las Vegas. These are all the world-class kind of locations that can get exposure in the Pin Game Journal, like get lots of mentions on RGP constantly. Each of them in their particular markets gets stories in the local newspaper. So the real question is, are there some arcades or operator location synergies that aspire to move up to that level? Or can we have some kind of graduated incentive so that if they don't aspire to become a world-class location, they aspire to become a kind of a place to play pinball that would draw from, let's say, a radius of 1 hour's travel time. There's such a good pinball place that people would travel an hour to get there. And like the place in Burlington, Pennsylvania, I don't know if that qualifies as world-class or if it's at that next level down, that it's at least the best thing in metropolitan Philadelphia. So open question, anyone on the panel want to talk about that? Do you have any ideas on, are there other locations, whether they be arcades or separately owned locations, that are on the brink of moving up to a higher level? Do you have any knowledge, or do you have any experience of someone trying to move up that way? Okay, Dave?
Well, we do have, as Dave mentioned, Lloyd's SS Billiards, which is kind of already established. But within the time that we've been kind of doing the Twin City Pinball Enthusiast thing, there have been a few locations that have upgraded. We've had a few parties, quote-unquote, where we came in and requested an operator to bring in more machines, which they did, knowing that they would make more revenue, and only for one evening. But there is a bowling alley that's on the north side of the cities, and the gentleman contacted one of our members and kind of pointed out the fact that he's got some pinball machines, he heard about us, and it's a great location, and he remodeled recently. Added, he's got about eight machines.
And the name of this place is?
It's Blainbrook Bowling Center. It's up in Coon Rapids, right up Highway 65 out of the downtown area. And he's asked for our business cards to be placed in the machine. He's kind of hounding us through email to come back there more often. And as all of the world-class locations and people, they want the money. They want what's out there. And we're trying to do a little working with them. And there's a few other places that already exist as well. They're just not well-known about that have a lot. So there are people out there, but you have to find those people. They have to find you that have the energy you have. And together, you can make that happen by supporting them. So it is happening in our area.
Yeah. One of the things that separates the world-class locations from the others is that the world-class locations would typically have their own website. So you can Google search or whatever to find their own website. Other things that I think are criteria for world-class locations, clearly the quantity of games, maintenance of the games, or general quality, like buying all the games new is the way around the maintenance. Proper setup, of course, properly leveled, good lighting. And I tend to think places that have unusual titles, that's worth a few points, part of the criteria. Rotating in the titles, being open year-round is a plus, not absolutely necessary. There could be a seasonal world-class location. And that they're responsive, that they, through some means, which is what we're about to explore, if a player says, I'm not having a good pinball experience here, they can talk to somebody and things will get better. So I'm not particularly calling out special events like tournaments as part of it because, as I laid out earlier, I think what we really need to reach out to is the people who say, hey, I want to go play pinball tomorrow. Where can I go within an hour's drive? Maybe it's not a world-class location, but the second tier of locations would have some of these qualities. They'd rank highly on some, but not necessarily all. And ideally, they would treat pinball as some kind of an attraction. So they think that they are gaining more business because of the pinball. So Don, I think we're back to you and asking, how would you, as an operator, be willing to be contacted about when your machine, unfortunately, is giving a less than ideal pinball playing experience. What could work for you as a busy operator trying to be a one person, do everything kind of business? What do you need?
We talked about this before, obviously, setting up the talk today. My time is so limited. Phone calls would irritate me. I think the best way to do this is through email. And that would also sit the person, you know, they'd have to, the player would have to say, you know, I care enough about this, rather than to pick up my cell phone and go bug the operator. I care enough about this to actually sit down and describe what the problem is. And I'd make a couple other comments. One, leave the location out of it. Don't even mention what you're going to do to the location. And I'd take care of that. If that was going to happen, I'd say, hey, players are helping here. Keep an eye on the machines.
As a former operator, I agree completely. The location just screws up the message.
Exactly.
Brian, you think so? You're trying to tell the location what's wrong, and they get the message wrong. And
yeah, it's. Can you hear me without the microphone? I agree, because number one, most of the time they'll talk to a bartender, then the bartender will talk to the manager, and then that's usually sometimes the shortest route. Sometimes I'll go through three or four people, and you'll never know what happens. I mean, it wasn't a pinball, but something happened similarly to me yesterday, and it just happened through one person, it was completely blown out of proportion. So, you know, by the time it gets to him, you know, the pinball caught on fire and it's, you know, set the whole bar on blaze. And really what it was just a sticky flipper. So I think definitely the location out of it is probably best for everybody, concerned.
Other comments, Don? What else do you need?
I know the one thing that, let's say, you could say anything to me, it doesn't bother me. But most operators, you're going to have to treat with kid gloves. They're very independent people. They are offended very rapidly. You tell them their pinballs suck, and then he's going to, say, the hell with pinballs. You've got to really say, bend over, I'll kiss your butt. Please fix your pinballs. That's what you're going to have to do.
Dave, you want to jump in?
I'll try the no microphone thing, too. Can you hear me back there?
Yeah.
All right. I was just going to comment on what Don was saying and Dave was kind of talking about, and everyone up here. I think we're all aware of this, but you need to definitely speak through the cash box to get their interest. Once you've done that, you need to also make sure that when you communicate with them, that you're not bashing them in the head. They could care less, you know, if a rubber is about to break or a light bulb went out or the game doesn't work. And that may be of a paramount importance to us as a player, but in the end, if the machine functions on the basic level it's intended to, that's what they need to make the money. That's what we need to, at an initially point, we found, communicate to them. Now, again, we've got some more interest in the operator side, so there are a few of them that want us to get a little more detailed, or they will go in and they will strip down a game and clean it thoroughly before we show up. So, again, just kind of reiterating, I know we're all human, and you want to jump on the bandwagon, and oh, this sucks, and I hate this, but these guys don't want to hear it. They're very irritated to begin with, it seems like, pinball in general. So you have to kind of put that first hand forward and show them that, you know, you're willing to patronize them and not just cut them down because they have a crappy machine. So,
and I'll make one other comment. There are times when players, and I've run into this happen before, where players understand a problem the game is having that is so odd, to try to describe that to a location to relay would be impossible. Sometimes I have to, I'll call and say, is that player there now? And he'll say, yeah. Tell him to stay there. I'll be over. I'll go over and have the player explain to me. Because when I get there, I can't figure out what he was saying, but he's right.
Yeah.
You know, sometimes those players understand some of the strangest things that can happen.
And just for the other side of it, a few months ago, I stuck my head in a bar in Manchester, New Hampshire that I hadn't seen before that I could tell from the front they had some coin-offs, and I asked if there were any pinball machines in there, and the guy who was apparently the manager of the location points right at a video game and says, there is a pinball machine. So I don't think I'd be trying to get his help in getting any message through to the operator. Okay, any other remarks you want to make about repairs before we get into something a little bit more positive? Okay, so we have some sense now of how we might be able to build up good communication channels from the players to the operators, the people who actually own the machines and are depending on them for their livelihood. And we're talking, apparently we've reached the conclusion to bypass the location in those environments where there's location involved as a separate business, because to them, typically, you know, if it's not Shorty's, then it's probably a place where the pinball or whatever coin op is just an ancillary revenue source. But what about if we're trying to do something like Twin Cities does and glorify the playing of pinball, perhaps leave the location a little bit better than it was? One of the reasons I wanted this particular combination of people together is because I want to talk about what happens when the players go and start talking about locations, hopefully in a positive light, doing publicity for the location, building up the locations, here's a good place to play pinball, without the consent of either the location or the operator, just because they like the place. Is there some guidelines, some good and bad? What if people start really putting a lot more data in one of the database-driven locator sites, be it Barcade or one of the other three? Then what resentments could inadvertently be built up that we would have to counteract, and how should we do it the right way? So, Don, I'll pick on you again. Do you have something that would really irritate you if people started posting on the net about your location or putting entries in databases and your location was saying, people are coming in here asking to play the pinball machine, I don't have one. Would there be any downsides to worry about?
I know the one thing when we talked about this is that I'm a little concerned about this, and that's why I think a little bit of it has to be done anonymously, is that, let's face it, I've got competition out there that would love to take the location away from me. So in most cases, my competitors don't know which locations are mine. I do not put stickers on my machines. I'm a small guy. The big guys and we get along most of the time, but every now and then, I had a situation happen about a year ago, and I had lost four locations within a couple weeks. He decided to get aggressive, and until I went and stole a couple of his, it didn't stop. So that's something I could see could be a problem, identifying who's the operator in those locations.
Well, so that sounds like a real problem. Maybe Ryan will have some comment on this. I think what he's saying is he would prefer not to be glorified as an operator. He doesn't want people posting on the net saying, this Don Bosworth, find his locations because he's got good pinball. If the location is publicized, that sounds okay, but not the operator. You comment?
Yeah, well, that's actually, getting into Barcade's mission as a whole, that was one of the first things that we ran into as far as pushback, is when we first launched it, we had several operators saying, well, I don't want to be on this site for the simple fact that I don't want my location stolen. And that is why, number one, we do not put down whose location it is. But in the same breath, our focus is, again, for the end user, which is something as the industry as a whole has never really done a good job with. And I imagine you could probably agree with me on that, where as a manufacturer, that they target the operators and the distributors as far as to sell their product. They never go after the player and the distributor. They only really target the operator. They never really go after the player. And so that is why Barcade, and I'm not just trying to stump Barcade here, is really said, listen, we need to get the word out. I said one of the best examples of this, and this may sound crazy to you, but if you just put pinball in a Google search, the first thing that comes up is Starsky and Hutch Flash pinball that was for the movie. That's the first thing that comes up. And in the first 20 to 30 results is all these little Flash games that are on the game sites. And a few of them are actual, Stern or Go to Barcade, things like that. So I think that is something that, Betson saw as a distributor. We really need to get the word out. That's why they came up with Barcade. Now, AAMA, which is the Manufacturers Association for our industry, is also looking at this and saying, listen, you know, we really need to get the word out for all games in general to the public. They are starting a huge PR campaign. Another hat that I wear for Betson is I'm actually doing a big PR campaign for Big Buck Hunter Pro. And one of the things that we're going to be doing is working with Men's Magazine, all of Maxim, things like that. And we're going to be doing a hunt for Big Buck Hunter Pro. And what it is we're going to get people.
Does that machine need that much promotion?
You know, the funny thing is
at least it's microphone the same thing.
Yeah.
Yeah, the funny thing about it, Big Buck Hunter Pro has been the number one arcade game out there for the last year. But if you look on the Big Buck Hunter Pro site, there's only 65 locations listed on there. So people that are looking for the games, they have no place to go. And so that is the same thing the barcade has run into as far as we want to get all locations out there so people can find these places. You know, maybe there are some budding shorties or somebody, I forget the Blainbrook out there. You know, there's Castles and Coasters down in Phoenix, Arizona, but there are a lot of places that we're just not aware of, just for the simple fact that people are not going out and putting it on their personal websites or even using MySpace this free or using Barcade this free. All these sites out there, these groups are getting together with your group. I mean, it's a way to do it. There's no one way. You can't just go to Barcade. You can't just go to MySpace, whatever. You have to do a multifaceted approach, and that's as a company Betson is looking at. That's how AMA is looking at it. And, you know, basically what I want to say is, you know, we want to be one part of that for you to help promote it. You know, the fact that we're the number one site in the industry is definitely a help, but, you know, if we get a bunch of word out about, let's say, Pirates, it's going to help out everybody. That's, you know, people say, oh, yeah, Pirates, they didn't know about this, but wait a minute. I heard that there was, a Sopranos pinball that came out, and so it's just a way to kind of like a gateway to get people into it, and it's, you know, no mistake about it, you know, Betson, the reason why we put Barcade out there is to grab more players, just so we could help the industry as a whole. And we've never been bashful about that.
Okay, so at this point, we probably know a couple weaknesses. First, about all the locator sites in general. Let me sketch out very briefly. In your program guide, there's a list, there's a whole page of URLs, and on there, as we always have, we list the World Pinball Directory at DaveLand.com/pinball. That is different from all the other locator sites because it's a hypertext, link-oriented kind of thing. And what he's trying to do, and I spoke with him quite extensively before this panel, he's just trying to be the locator of locators for the different regional groups like Twin Cities. So when you go to the World Pinball Directory, you're just seeing geographical regions. New England is kind of large for a region, but that's one. And then New York City, Philadelphia. And what you find for those regions that have an entry is just a link to, like, nycpinball.org would be the New York City one, because that's a website that's specific to describing pinball in New York City. Well, that's fine for having all the great diversity of the web, and every site is a little different, has its own personality, and you can see how different regional groups have done things, whether they have an organization like Free State Pinball Association, whether it's just some guy talking about pinballs he's seen in his area. All the other sites that offer the service of helping you find pinball on location are database driven. Barcade is one. VP Forums has a database there for locations. One thing they do better than Barcade is they have a very good quick pick functionality, so it's easy to say all the pinballs in New Hampshire, press a couple buttons, and there it is, and it's only that one table right there for you. Barcade probably does better in overall flash and organization and having a sense of there's a lot of data that you can munge in different ways. However, this Teresa Dickert did a project for her computer course and left it up as pldb.org. Got some participation. She's spent more time than the others, I think, thinking about what she allows members of just the average random visitor public to do versus authorized people can do more to change the data. And she also has a very good tie-in to IPDB as the list of all the machines. So another lesson for all the other sites to learn is how do you get the game names straight? How do you say that this game, you know, for pirates it's probably easy, but when you talk about a game, an older game, Knockout is one that's been mentioned on RGP recently. Well, there's two Knockouts. People are discussing the two in parallel, which one's which. IPDB straightens that out. PLDB.org, Teresa Dickert's thing, correctly ties into that so it stays straightened out. And the last one is Ken in Texas, pinballrebel.com. Very simple database structure. He only does placements, which is the combination of a location and a machine. So it's very hard to enter data, but he's definitely the best at going out there and pushing. So if you're in the community, probably the one of those four database-driven sites that you've heard about is the Pinball Rebel one, because Ken's always there saying, hey, go to Pinball Rebel. And of course, he also does the instruction cards. He's in here because of the instruction cards rather than his location. So he's building up traffic and reaching out to the community. So I think that gives you a perspective of where Barcade sits from the point of view of the community. It's the least known one, because I know you've come into your daughter, somebody has come in on RGP once in a great while and said, hey, we've got this barcade.com. But these other things that people are coming in on more of a daily basis. So there is room, I think. All the guys I've talked about, I haven't reached Angelo Russo for VP Forums, but everybody else says, we'll work together. You know, we'll exchange ideas about what's a good architecture. And we need a little bit more of that from at least one of the sites to adopt a few good ideas, because then we can say to all these people and the people out on RGP, okay, if you really want to help, one thing you can do is go put entries in these databases so that other people can search and have much better data come back at them. So comment there?
Yeah, and that's, I'll save my voice here.
Yeah, and that is one thing that we've actually been wanting to do from the beginning is partner with folks. And a lot of people, you know, weren't sure exactly what is this deal with Barcade. And so one of the things that we have done, and you know, look back with the whole Big Buck Hunter Pro thing, we are looking to do a bounty for, you know, every time somebody submits a pinball into Barcade. What we would do is, you know, have a drawing maybe every 2 weeks, every month, and we give away, you know, some swag from Stern and things like that. I think that's one way to definitely help the, you know, getting the site popular.
For these people, you don't even need to give away something. Just say, this is going to help, and that will be enough for incentive of its own.
Yeah, and that's, you know, the other thing also is that we're always looking for constructive guests. You know, Barcade is a great site as far as, you know, when we first created it, and it definitely we've changed it along the way. But if there are some things that people would like to see, you know, if maybe an easier way to upload games, or as you mentioned, David, is, you know, a better way to actually find the games, or just, you know, just a straight ahead pinball search. I mean, we're definitely looking at different ways to do that. And you can't do that on Barcade. It's just a little convoluted right now. But, I mean, this is a site that is not just here it is, you know, bow down to Barcade, can't be changed. This is something that is definitely fluid, and if we want it to stay relevant, we have to be able to make changes. So.
Yeah, I think another part is getting into a larger web kind of, you know, I'll use the cliche, the web architecture, so that the Twin Cities, for example, can feel comfortable saying, well, rather than have our own database, we'll say that Barcade is going to be our database, or that there's some way that data is exchanged back and forth between the local one and the Barcade one, because they have a data exchange protocol of some kind. Are there DBMS people here, people who work with database systems as a day job? Okay. We could probably rouse up some database management expertise through RGP if that were the weak point to get some of that to happen, or web services if that's the way that the interchange would happen best. And then if that works, then daveland.com can also have sort of an instant link over to a table query against the Barcade for those geographies where they don't currently have any site that they've identified. And by the way, I would compliment Barcade on having the best approach to the geography issue of how you make entries in the database and say they're for a particular geography rather than just state by state. You have those metro areas. Mm-hmm. So I think that's one of the things where you're the best and other people should be learning from you. Thank you. So that might be some of the connection from the world going down inward to various geographies. So that Don, you might get some traffic coming in that way. Now, as an operator, would you feel comfortable making your own entries in Barcade or some website where? You don't have to answer all your locations, of course, but you know the ones that you would be willing to tell visitors from out of town.
I want to do it on a trial basis to see how it works.
Yeah. Okay. And Dave, do you see somebody? I know you've got a special database situation there that most regional groups don't have, and maybe there's some new way to get around the problems you're currently having. So anyone who goes to daveland.com/pinball, the World Pinball Directory, and asks about the Twin Cities, they're going to find a dead link right now. That's not the TCPE. That's, well, whatever. Tell them whatever you think you want to say about that.
We're very fortunate that a couple of years ago, a couple of pinball enthusiasts came to us, and as a college project, I believe it was, started up what we refer to as the Twin City Pinball Database. And it's very robust. Unfortunately, I haven't been to Barcade myself because it has been a very good vehicle to produce and find and help maintain locations and information. So we've had some challenges as of late. They moved and they've somewhat lost interest. And it's, again, we're all very grassroots in Minnesota and the different things that we do up there in terms of these different pinball entities that have survived. So, definitely we need to chat here yet today, hopefully, and look at that. But just to jump back into all of this and supporting Don and the Barcade and even Benson indirectly, just remember that we're the people that influence this. And by going out to a location and by speaking, if you develop a rapport with Don, he's going to be more apt to listen to you and your concerns because he's going to be gun-shy, like you said, about location infiltration. And also about the information that it's just not some guy walking in, picking on his machine and walking out, not putting money in. So just again, I ask that you remember. And our group are made up of, there's kind of a backbone of it, of our own local news group called Pinnesota. And then the Twin City Pinball Enthusiasts are a group of people that go out every 3 weeks on a regular basis to meet up and do kind of what I spoke about. And then again, we have the database, which is kind of our weak link. Kind of try and shore that up, but if you want to make things happen, you have to, I guess in my eyes, and apparently other people in Minnesota, you need to get the money in the cash box, get the operator enthusiastic, get the other people along.
Now you probably have some operators that were kind of only going through the motions of operating pinball because they were on the brink of leaving pinball if they could, and they just were doing it out of a sense of obligation. You have some turnaround stories there?
Well, don't get me wrong, that still happens at all times. It's, you know, it's the operator and their fickleness or where they are or are not making money. We also patronize the location as well in terms of food, drink, any other things that we can, you know, take part in over there. So they're making the money not just off of their cut. But so yes, we have members that have developed. There's one in particular in Minnesota, Jen McGaffey, which you may have seen her post on RGP or other areas, she's very outspoken, often will go out to a location that she frequents and kind of says, hey man, you gotta get a pimple, you gotta get a pimple. And they have done that. And the rest of us have all made our attempts. And like I say, we've had inroads in that. We've had a few special get-togethers and extra machines have come in. And we're very fortunate. We do have Lloyd, but you know, if we went to Lloyd every time, we would get to that point where unless Lloyd's buying 20 games a year from Stern, is he helping to make that? So Lloyd is definitely a huge, huge benefit for us, and we're all very happy that we have him. But again, remember, it's the cash box, it's the operator, it's the distributor, and it's Stern. And if there isn't any flow through in that cash box, no one's going to buy a pinball machine. Home sales are great. Again, that's another thing. But if we don't get out there and play them, so...
So Don, we need a reality check here. Do you know of any reason, any concern that the location would have, this is a separately owned location, street location, if you will, that they would not want a group like the Twin Cities coming in and invading their place to play pinball? Is there any downside that we have to worry about there?
I don't see it.
Okay.
Now, you get some locations that are just temperamental about anything, but I don't see any.
Okay, so at least for this day, until we get any further experience, we go out there and say, all right, let's just go talk it up with the location, say we're here because we heard you had a good pinball machine. If you didn't have a good pinball machine, we wouldn't be here, we wouldn't be buying your pizza or whatever. And try to get the word out that way when you're actually there on the site. Ryan, you agree that locations, it's always worth saying we're here because of the pinball, it's unlikely to be a downside?
Yeah, I don't think, I mean, as far as...
Microphone, please.
Oh, sorry. You know, as far as Barcade goes, we've never had anybody, you know, on the site say, hey, listen, take us off. We're getting folks coming in here, we don't want that. I think that, you know, the main reason, if you just look at it, it's just as a business stance, is the reason why the locations want these games in here, being video games, being touchscreens, being pinball, whatever, is an extra revenue source and a reason for the people to stay. And the longer they stay, the more likely they're going to spend money on beer, food, pop,
okay,
whatever.
What about the laundromat then? Maybe the laundromat doesn't. Well, you do only attended laundromats, right? Though,
yes, only attended laundromats.
So it's maybe not so bad, but that's... I mean, we try hard here to think of how things could go wrong before we start sending the masses out there to do a campaign, so we make sure we don't alienate anybody. Dave, you have a comment?
I just want to comment on that real quickly. We've joked about going to a laundromat, but oftentimes when you go to a laundromat, if you have, they'll have a sign that says no loitering and such. And we try to be very aware when we're at a location that, again, what Dave's talking about and the rest of the panel is that we don't want to alienate ourselves, and that's not to say that we all haven't gone out and done stupid things, myself included, but nevertheless, it comes back to finding these locations. We try to hit a bar or two, and then in the next location we'll do like a family fun center, or that Blainbrook Bowling, or a mini golf course, because we want to make it accessible to everyone. There are children out there that parents bring along. But that's not the core thing. It's the people that want to play the pinball and be enthusiastic. And again, jumping back to not alienating anyone, we include everyone, no dues, no nothing. It just started with a bunch of us going out going, you know, we're always bumping into people. Well, let's put it out where we're going to go next. And we have cards now so we can hand them out to people. And it's just, again, it's getting people enthused. And realizing it's out there because, and I'm sorry, and then I'll stop here, Dave, but you see kids all the time. They come over and play a game. Adults come over and play a game at your house or out even on location. And pinball is still an extremely viable outlet for entertainment. It's not like a classic Chevy in the 80s or a jukebox, a bubbler jukebox. In 1980, you would have gone out might have gotten to drive your buddy's 57 Chevy that was a $30,000 car, or play, you know, some Bill Haley on his Wurlitzer Bubbler. But it's a 78. It's old. It's antiquated. It's very cool. It's very collectible. It's hot, 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 just like the collecting market of pinball is. But nevertheless, at that time, it wasn't a viable product. They would not have made more new product for people to enjoy. Pinball is different. You can take a 70s game, a 60s game, 80s, 90s, it doesn't matter what the game is. Somebody walks up and either has a recollection or association from a prior good time in their life, college, being a kid, someone else's house. So it's very, very important to promote that in everything that we do.
The skills are transferable. So if you could play that 60s machine, you can play that.
Right. It doesn't matter. I mean, there's the whole subculture here of surface mount technology or a monitor on the playfield or all these things. That's great and needs to happen. Again, that's part of the entire equation. But nevertheless, I guess where we come from is making sure that that equation can take place, not just on the hobby level with a bunch, again, of us nerds all sitting out here, you know, doing the Glavin thing and getting happy and, you know, talking about pinball. We've got to get it out there on the location. So I've redorculated. I'm sorry.
Final question for each of you in turn. Start with Don. How about locations? Is there a location, an example of a location that really cared about their reputation as a place to play pinball that you've experienced? If not, then we'll have to do something about that. Want to think about that while we go ahead?
I do.
Dave? A location in the Twin Cities that cares about its pinball reputation that would be very happy if they knew they were getting publicity?
Well, we obviously, again, are very happy to have SS Billiards.
All right, so beyond that world class.
Well, there's, like I say, the mini golf course in Spring Lake Park. I actually haven't said that. Mini golf course in Spring Lake Park, Minnesota. It's run by Big Al, who many of you out here know, as well as the Blaine Brook. A gentleman has taken interest in that and has bought pinball machines. There's an operator that does the Kitty Redemption, but the pinballs are done by the gentleman that owns the location.
All right, so that's a little bit more like the arcade scenario for the pinball, so that might not quite qualify, but...
True.
Okay, just keep in mind what your structure is, who you're dealing with, and who's going to have the vested interest, so when you make your appeal, you know what their interest is in it. Ryan, do you want to jump in with
it's going back to Shorty's, but I guess to give everybody an idea of how proud they are of the pinball that they have. Number one, they advertise on local radio that, you know, it is pinball and beers. It's not beer and pinball. It's pinball first. And the other thing that they do that is some people might find horrific, but I think is amazing, in the booths that they have, instead of a standard table, they take an old pinball. And that is the actual table you use when you're eating. And it's like an old 50s pinball, and it's gorgeous. It's a great feeling. And again, the fact that they have these these 12 pinballs is all in the back in this room, and they're all cranked. I mean, your ears will be bleeding after you're in there for 10 minutes, but it is all by itself. I mean, there are no other games back there, and it's beautiful. As a fan of pinball, I mean, you just go back there, and it's nirvana, really.
Okay, and I'd also mention that I've heard the similar things about the Replay Lounge in Lawrence, Kansas. The home of the University of Kansas. The Replay Lounge is another place that tries to push their, well, you can tell by their name. So Don, have you know, is there any location that would offer to buy a neon sign that says pinball and put it in the back wall or do something?
The majority of locations in my area are one pinball max. There's a few, I've got them all, there are three, but for the most part. But I did just have another thought. You know, they're related to that. They're in our area, what's it called? I can't remember. It's one of those trash magazines that you pick up for free and anywhere around the city. And once a year, they have the best of the city.
Oh, yeah.
And that would be real nice to have a competition in there. Now, there is a category, best jukebox.
Yeah, a lot of those that I'm familiar with, you have on the ballot, the reader ballot, there's a blank at the end, you know, other categories we didn't include. Mm-hmm. So if you see one of those magazines in your city, you can put in best pinball and then fill in your favorite location. It's possible that the editorial staff of the magazine will take that and put it in there, even though it wasn't one of their categories.
I know for quite a few years, when Golden Tee was really hot up in the Twin Cities, I forget which paper it was, but they had best place to play Golden Tee. And so that is, I don't think that's too far off of getting pinball up there.
We did try the best pinball location, and I guess one of the members, again, Jen,
had gotten some interaction on that. I don't think we've ever seen it, but we had tried to get that involved. So it may reappear up there.
Right. So now our main point here is not about publicity, though. I just bring that up as a another part of the overall package. But I know that all of you in this room will continue to want to go out and play pinball. You know, you could get home from Expo, and after taking care of all those things that you had to let slide, you'll want to go out and play pinball. So it's not so much a question of whether you want to go play pinball in the future and whether you'll play pinball on location in the future. It's a question of whether those locations will be there, which can only be answered affirmatively if there are people besides us who, when they see that stimulus on the TV or in the movies or whatever, decide they want to go play pinball and have a way to find those games because of work of people like you to make that information readily available to them. And of course, we've got the rest of the expo to talk offline about other ideas. I had a lot more material prepared so that we wouldn't run out, so there's plenty of other things we didn't get to cover today. But I think you see that this is really vital for the business. It's really vital to keep that supply chain going so that there are people who will make parts and people who will do all the technology that we need for the hobby also need that business foundation in order to make it economically viable. So I thank you for your time, and we have to go on to the next session on the program.
Can I just say real
quick? All right, one more.
I brought a bunch of business cards about our site, so I'd like to hand them out. I'd ask that you take one at the bare level just to see what it is that we do, because I'm long-winded and all over the place, and it's very definite on what it is that we do. It's kind of a crappy site. We're working on a new one, but you'll get the idea. So if I can...
Dave, yeah. We have a guest speaker here.
Joe Blackwell from Stern Pinball. Here's a guy who's on the pinball location.
I apologize for being late, everyone.
Yeah.
So where do we leave off?
Did we save the business? Is there still going to be pinball manufacturing in the future? Show of hands, yes? Okay, three say yes, how many say no? Two say no? All right, well, 3-2, you win. It's still in business.
So what are we talking about as far as operators, Phil?
Operators are... very quirky bunch of people. They're independent business people who are shy about having their name associated with locations, the street locations, because those locations might get scooped by other operators. But what we have that is the good part is the green interface on the chart. This is what Barcade reaches out to and the other locator sites, where the players are putting money in the cash box of games that are available to the public. That kind of publicity, we haven't found any sort of a downside where we have to worry about publicizing the fact that a particular location has a particular machine.
Right, right.
And if the location is not good about conveying to the operator that the machine's in bad repair, the player could talk straight to the operator if we can work out a little bit of the outreach. And Don had an idea that maybe state associations or national associations might need to be a help there.
You know, to spend 5 minutes, if you don't mind, as a manufacturer, the only leverage, I don't have any leverage, let's put it that way. The pressure I can put on operators is regarding preventive maintenance. Let's face it, if they had preventive maintenance schedules intact, and on a regular basis visit their machines with the intent of cleaning, checking fasteners, replacing light bulbs, you probably wouldn't have to call in most cases. But when you do tell a location, the number one complaint from operators is that, hey, they're not calling me and let me know. So should you as a player call the operator direct? The answer is yes, but I even discussed with some operators last night. They're going to tell you, I don't have time to hear about every light bulb that's out, every bonus feature that doesn't work, going into the rule set so deep that they don't even want to know. And our goal as a manufacturer is don't make them read, don't make them think. You know, the player or the operator. So reliability is also, that's our responsibility. We've spent extensive research looking into solid-state LEDs for all incandescent bulbs. We're heading in that direction, but trust me, it's tough right now with cost. If you throw 50 additional dollars into a pinball for LEDs, you're going to lose play field features. You're going to lose other things. We can't cheapen the product in that area because that's what attracts you, the player, the collector, to the machine. Good title, nice package, good choreography. We've gone to a better board system with a better operating system as far as software goes, which will tell you more as far as diagnostic goes. So we're trying to help you every way we can. As far as the operators, I never sit down and let them, I stand up. Donald's a good operator. Donald's a good example of a smaller operator. A one-man, two-man show isn't going to be able to do the type of maintenance the larger operators, you know, have the resources to do. If you have two or three technicians working for you as an operator, there's no reason not to have a maintenance schedule as far as visiting your locations, just upkeeping pinball. Yes, it's the most complicated piece in the route. Yes, it requires more maintenance. That's the nature of the beast. That's just what we do for a living. And if you don't like doing that, don't be an operator. I don't mean to pick on you, Don, because he's a smaller guy, so he ends up taking more time. He has to say, okay, I'm going to collect it, satisfy the needs of my customer, and clean the machines, check the coin mix, make sure everything works. But it's not a perfect world, so you don't always have the time to do that. 10 calls in my day, and I'm on number 6, and it's 5 o'clock already. What do I do? So everyone does the best they can. But what I saw there makes a lot of sense. Communication is the key to success in any organization or any network. So the key thing for you is, yes, call the operator, but be reasonable. He's running a business. If it's about a light bulb or this or the start button hasn't flashed in 3 weeks, cut the guy some slack. But if a feature doesn't work, an important feature in the game, call him. Let him know, because guaranteed, telling the bartender is not going to get the job done. And it's the number one complaint for most operators. As far as I go, I'm always pushing for maintenance programs and we're a service organization. That's what Don is, and that's what I do for a living. So as a service organization, you have to be responsible for this stuff, and we do push it, but I don't have a lot of leverage. And again, I do apologize for being late. I had it in my head it was 11. So I do apologize.
All right, well, you give me an opportunity to give another one of my little tirades that we're not going to make the operators do better at running their pinball machines by criticizing them. Always think in your mind, when you're talking to an operator you haven't met before, presume that they are the majority that is really ready to leave pinball. They're the one last straw, and they'll just take all their pinball machines off their route and never run pinball ever again. Always think that that's what they might be. Assume that, and then if they're a good operator like Don, you'll be lucky. But if they're really in that situation, and I think the majority of them are, or maybe the majority have already dropped pinball, but probably the majority have some pinball, they feel they have to, they don't really like it, or they have some objection, and they're waiting to act on those objections. Assume that, and when you talk to them, say, this is about putting money in your cash box. I realize that you have your demands on your time, et cetera, all the things Joe just said. And then get back to, I'm really trying to help you make more money. And I have this player association, if you can say that, that will come to this location, will spend lots if there's good pinball. So, okay. Don, you think maybe the state associations might have some way to help out?
Every state doesn't have an association. So my guess is it's AMOA, you, AMOA, and the operators.
I think it's a good point. State associations, we do represent our product at the meetings, annual meetings, biannual meetings. So I think we need to stress this point to them more and let them know we go to the Pinball Expo and have the support of all the players, collectors, and operators that show up here. We'll try to make that more of a priority, though. Trust me, it's always discussed, maintenance and pinball. Many operators,
all right,
they jump on us.
Thing. Let's try this. Sure. At the next Minnesota State operation, let's have TCPE on their seminar program just saying what TCPE does. And I think a lot of operators will be surprised. They'll open their eyes to, here's, it's not all about the bad things that happen to pinball when it goes out of order. Here's some good things that happen where the players are building up.
But that comes back to the grassroots, is that the most of our operators know us already. It's everyone here and everyone that's here from Greater State Minnesota being involved with your operators. And just to comment on what both Don, Joe, and Dave were saying, again, you can talk to them, but make sure you're putting the money and give them a reason to listen to you. Because if you walk in, throw 50 cents in that machine, play a game, and go, this sucks, I'm going over here, and you try and tell the guy, well, blah, 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 but he's going to go, I don't care. Like I say, when we show up, we try to get 50 bucks or more in those cash boxes so they hear us loud and clear and they want to listen to us. So.
Okay, so money talks, and we have to go now. So you've heard enough about what to say, how to say it. Let's go out there and save this industry.